You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Hey, happy Monday to you. We appreciate you being with us. Arkansas is headed to the Liberty Bowl. The Razorbacks are going to play Texas Tech on December 27th in Memphis. It'll be a 6 o'clock kickoff, and it'll be on ESPN. Arkansas coach Sam Pittman, Texas Tech coach Joey McGuire had a teleconference last night. We'll play some of the highlights from that. We'll give you some insights on Texas Tech that we've looked up in the last 24 hours since this matchup became known. We'll also talk about Razorback basketball. Men's basketball team had a win over UTSA on Saturday, 75-60 at Bud Walton Arena. And the women's team had maybe the most impressive run you'll ever see in a basketball game yesterday in a win over Southeast Missouri State, 40-1 run. We'll talk about that with Ethan Westerman. We'll also talk about the playoff. Playoff bracket is out, and we've got some thoughts on that. Ethan Westerman is with me here now on the here in our studio. Let's start with Texas Tech. 8-4 overall, 6-3 in the Big 12, Ethan. One of the things that stands out to me about Texas Tech is that at this point, and I say at this point because the transfer portal opened today, at this point it doesn't look like their roster has been decimated quite as much as Arkansas's has been. There's really not a lot of great, you know, comparison you can make between these two teams. They both played Oklahoma State in Stillwater. Arkansas lost the game. Texas Tech won a shootout 56-48 a couple of weeks back, the night that Arkansas played Louisiana Tech. It's an interesting matchup. That's really all I know how to say. And I am surprised that Arkansas is back in the Liberty Bowl because they were there 2 years ago. Usually the bowls and the teams, they want to, you know, freshen it up a little bit. They don't want the same teams coming to their bowl game. And, you know, you don't want to go to the same bowl game because it can get a little stale on both sides when it's that way.
Yeah, and I think that's why a lot of fans, I think, heard the news and kind of groaned a little bit just because it's been so often, you know, in recent history that Arkansas has gone over there and played. But, you know, it's really, compared to some bowl projections that were out there, I think it was a pretty decent, as far as opponent getting a big name.
It's better than the 68 Ventures Bowl, which was projected quite a bit. Yeah, Mobile. There were a lot of people, there were a lot of national people who had Arkansas picked to play Bowling Green in Mobile, Alabama the day after Christmas. So
yeah, it
could have been worse.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, end of the day, it was got a pretty decent, like, a opponent for sure. And then you got, you know, it's not some bowl game that, you know, you're like, what even is that? Like, people are familiar with the Liberty Bowl. It is one of the SEC bowls. So, yeah, it's an interesting matchup, though, because Texas Tech just seems to be in a different, yeah, totally different situation than Arkansas. And you look at even, like, what Texas Tech has been, like, perhaps their weakness this year with their pass defense.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, who's Arkansas even going to have to throw it to? To where it's like, is that even as much of a factor? But who knows? It's just it's one of those things where we say it over and over. We probably beat this point too much. But, I mean, you get to a bowl game and it's not even the same team. So, but for Arkansas, it seems like very much more than Texas Tech, not the same team.
Andreas Poska may be Arkansas's leading receiver at the Liberty Bowl. They're without Isaiah Satania. They're without Andrew Armstrong. Lucas has said that he's going into the transfer portal. You still got Isaac Teslaw. You know, you've still got some of the other receivers who haven't done as much this year, and they'll get a chance to shine at this bowl game. But you're right. You do wonder what the passing game is going to look like. You're missing potentially two of your offensive linemen in this game. I don't know if Josh Braun has said whether or not he's going to the transfer portal today. There was a little bit of conflicting information toward the end of last week about whether or not he was going to go to the transfer portal or not. It opens today. We'll see. We'll see what happens. Patrick Kutis, a Memphis native, he won't be there to play in this bowl game. It's going to be a lot different looking Arkansas roster. I'll say this about the bowl and the attendance. Number one is that the Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium. Am I right about that?
Yeah.
They got a sponsor a year or two ago, and they're undergoing a big renovation there in Memphis. It's like a $200 million renovation that they're undergoing at that stadium over the course of two or three phases. Obviously, Memphis plays there too. It's not just the bowl game. It's going to be a much lower attendance, a more intimate setting than when Arkansas has played there in the past. You know, when Arkansas goes to Memphis a lot of years for these Liberty Bowls, it's like some of the greatest attendances they've ever had in Memphis. East Carolina, the second largest attendance they've ever had at the Liberty Bowl when they played Kansas State there about 9 years ago. That was the fourth largest attendance they've had. The two largest they've had have been when Mississippi State play there or plays there. So, you know, obviously that's nearby too. You hear all these people talk about, well, you know, you need to keep that presence in Little Rock. Play games at War Memorial Stadium. Well, this is kind of the same thing. You know, why do they want the thing? Why do they want the games in Little Rock? It's so the people in the south part of the state, the east part of the state, central part of the state, they can get to a game more conveniently. Memphis isn't a whole lot farther, maybe even closer to some of those locations than Little Rock is.
Yeah, there will be a lot of people who go over there for that game. It's always, I think of that Kansas State game. I was still in either junior high or high school. I was in high school. And I remember.
Seriously?
I was.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Okay, keep going.
I was in high school watching that game, and that was the game that Arkansas wore, like, the chrome red helmets.
Yeah.
And, but anyway, I just remember how Arkansas took over the stadium for that game. There was a whole lot of red.
There was a Kansas State beat reporter at that game, and he said, I seriously underestimated how much of a home game this was going to be for the Razorbacks.
Yeah.
And it was that way for the East Carolina game, too. That East Carolina game, it was cold. I mean, anybody who was there knows how cold it was. It was like 28 degrees at kickoff. Kickoff was at 6, so it only got colder as the night went along. And then because of the wind chill, I think it was like 10. So it was but that was a home game for Arkansas, too. Where they played East Carolina. But the bowls have changed in the last 10 years. The playoff has changed how people view the bowls. You know, the fact that, you know, just the number of bowls, I think, has affected how people view the bowls. So this is I could really feel this a couple of years ago when they played Kansas there. It's like, hey, this feels a lot different from when they played Kansas State and obviously when they played East Carolina. The bowl game's not quite what they used to be. I think the attendance is going to be capped at about 42,000 for this game,
mm-hmm.
whereas in the past
like
it's been in the 60,000 range.
It seems like that 42,000 is more than they were doing for Memphis games this year. I don't know how they're getting that up, but what I read about the Memphis games this year, it was like low 30,000s. So I guess they're making sure that there's room to fit a Razorback fan base. But, yeah, I'm interested to see, like, what the fan base's excitement level is for this bowl game still.
To me, it's a Friday afternoon, 2 days after Christmas, you know, potentially a long weekend, depending on how people take their holidays or how their offices are set up, because you got, you know, New Year's Eve and New Year's Day coming up right after that weekend. It's a cheap way for a lot of people who can't get to Fayetteville to go watch a game.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, if you're in Forest City or you're in Wynn or you're in Pine Bluff or, you know, somewhere over in that part of the state, Marion, Jonesboro, it's a quick trip over to Memphis, West Memphis. You go over there. It's a quick trip over to watch the Razorbacks. Razorbacks got a big following in Memphis. I remember when I was in college here, you know, one of my best friends in college grew up in Memphis. There were a lot of people, it seemed like, who had come over to college here from Memphis. So it's a way for those people who are local. Hey, we can drive in 20, 30 minutes, 40 minutes and go see a Razorback game. Come home that night. It's a relatively, you know, cheap trip.
Yeah. I'm just curious if it's going to be – I mean, that's always been the case whenever Arkansas has played over there, as far as it's a cheap trip for a lot of people. I'm just, by and large, curious to see how – are people going to get juiced up for this game, like,
no,
at all?
No, like, they're not.
It's just in the past you get –
I
excited.
Think it's one of those deals where you just turn it on and it's like, okay – let's just see what the next 3 hours bring.
Yeah, I just don't think it carries as much weight at all anymore. Nobody cares about a bowl game as much anymore. It's from the fan standpoint, because it's not even the same team that you watched all year. I guess it's like the what you can really glean is, can some of these guys who you haven't seen play for much of the year, can they maybe be a contributor in the future? And can, I guess, Taylen Green throw the ball to a bunch of guys he's not throwing it to?
Arkansas has been playing in Memphis since 1907. It'll be their 27th time to play in the city. They have a 13-13 record there. It's not just the Liberty Bowl they played there. This will be their seventh time to play at the Liberty Bowl. They played Memphis there. They played Ole Miss there. They played LSU there. They played Tennessee in Memphis. So they played a number of games over there in various forms. Mentioned they've got a 13-13 record in Memphis, and they're going to be back in Memphis next year. They're going to play the Tigers on September 20th next year in a true road game. Last night there was a teleconference that included Texas Tech's AD, Arkansas's AD. Hunter Yurecek was not able to be on there. I believe he was traveling back from the college football playoff duties that he had down in the Dallas area at the time that they had this teleconference. Sam Pittman was there, and Joey McGuire, the Texas Tech coach, was there. And Joey McGuire dropped a little bit of news on us. He said that he grew up as a Razorback fan. He grew up in Texarkana, Texas. Grew up as a Razorback fan. Said he and his family had season tickets at War Memorial Stadium for a number of years. Said his uncle ran on a track team at Arkansas for one of their national championship track teams. So this is obviously a family that has a lot of Razorback ties. And McGuire said this was a very exciting matchup for him. I will tell you, before we play this clip, it's an audio-only clip. This was a teleconference. And for people of a certain age, if you know what a party line is, that's kind of what this teleconference was like last night. It was just kind of jump in whenever you want to. So there's going to be a lot of background noise in this. Nothing that we could do about this. It was kind of thrown together. And this is what Joey McGuire, though, had to say about playing the Razorbacks, his boyhood team.
To Little Rock and went to the games there?
Yes, sir. So I was born in Texarkana, and all my mom's side's from Arkansas. My uncle, Clark Wayne, ran on one of y'all's national championship track teams. And so, man, from whenever I was 4 years old until we moved to Fort Worth, which was in 1983, we had tickets. And, man, it's hard not to grow up a Razorback fan whenever you go to those games and see the plastic Razorback hats. I might have one of those in my closet. I tell everybody that was like my dream school of where I wanted to go play football and wasn't fortunate enough or good enough to play there. But it's really a cool thing. My mom actually sent me a text today whenever she found out, and she was all fired up. She said, "You're going to have a lot of family from Arkansas. They'd be saying Raider Power instead of calling the Hogs this time for me, though, I hope."
So that was Joey McGuire on playing Arkansas. It reminds me a little bit when Arkansas played East Carolina there after the 2009 season. East Carolina at that time was coached by Skip Holtz, who had grown up in Fayetteville, Lou Holtz's son. And so it's kind of like, well, they say time is a flat circle. It's very reminiscent, I think, of 15 years ago, playing a team with a coach who grew up loving the Razorbacks.
Yeah, it's very interesting how you see it's just there's so many ties to where college football all comes together, where it's like a coach grew up watching Arkansas, and then, you know, there's Sam Pittman. He has so many ties to the state of Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. Just all these coaches, it's interesting hearing their backgrounds and, like, you know, how that they can grow to love the program that they're at, but they originally had a first love of a team, and it's always interesting when you hear the ones that Arkansas, it was the Hogs for them.
These two coaches, you know, really not a whole lot similar. What I'm saying is they are similar in that, you know, Pittman grew up out of state, but he was a Razorback fan because he grew up, you know, an hour from campus. Yeah. Same thing here with Joey McGuire, grew up out of state, but he grew up in a border town, Texarkana. Just kind of interesting how that works out. McGuire's a really good coach, by the way. I've been impressed with what he's been able to do at Texas Tech. This is his third year. He's had them in the bowl every year. He's had a winning record every year. I think the fewest number of wins he's had was 7 last year. It's kind of a Chad Morris-type story. Joey McGuire was a high school Texas coaching legend, won 3 state championships in a very short amount of time at Cedar Hill, had another state runner-up team there, went into the college ranks as an assistant, spent 5 years at Baylor, and then he got hired at Texas Tech after Matt Wells was let go 3 years ago. It's kind of like the anti, you know, Chad Morris. We saw what can happen whenever that type of transition does not go well. Texas Tech is experiencing, you know, what can happen when it does.
Yeah, and I could just kind of tell from listening to trying to listen to that call last night through all the other mud that you had to listen through. But he just seems like you can tell whenever somebody has, like, that high school background as far as just, like, willing, like, the excitedness to be mm-hmm. in a bowl game and just, like, I assume he's probably a lot of – I would guess he's fun to cover on the beat over there at Texas Tech just because it seems like he's probably pretty carried that, like, high school mentality where it's just, like, good to have coverage on your team. And he just seemed approachable to me.
Somebody told me that he still goes back and speaks to the Texas High School Coaches Association Convention every year and that the coaches just love it whenever he comes back. And so there's that – It's different, but it's similar to you know, somebody who you cover, Mike Nabors. He goes and he speaks to the Arkansas High School Coaches Association, you know, because he was one of them. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that ever really leaves those coaches. They understand that they've made it big in their field, but I don't know that they change a whole lot. Some of them may, but I think a lot of them don't.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think that it's hard to if you spend so much of your life. I mean. Not just a lot of your life, a lot of formative years of your life coaching that level. You kind of carry that. I don't know if it's what it is they carry with
it's
them.
Like you're carrying the banner for those coaches.
Yeah, and it's just like they know what it's like to be the coach that, you know, you're driving the school bus. You're not taking charter jets.
That's right.
So
yeah. Who was it? Matt Zimmerman said that he still keeps his CDL license. He renews it every you know, every time that it comes up for renewal. Because he had to have it whenever he was driving the bus at Dardanelle.
Yeah, it's just – it's crazy, you know. It's you'll get an athlete who transfers from, like, a low, low-level school, and you can tell they have an appreciation for being at, you know, Arkansas. Like, Andrew Armstrong, I think of him, like, what he transferred into is just, like, a shock. And I'm sure it's the same way for high school coaches that go from that to then all of a sudden they're just – I mean, all the bells and whistles that come with being an SEC or Big 12 head coach – it's just totally different, and it's probably got to cause some appreciation, I think.
I'll tell you, you can get the latest breaking news on all Razorback sports at wholehogsports.com, most in-depth source for all Arkansas sports. Award-winning team of reporters and photographers bring subscribers the most trusted Razorback news with analysis, latest in recruiting, unique stories on all your favorite teams. Subscribe today at wholehogsports.com. I want to tell you, too, you can find our podcast if you're listening to us on our video podcast on YouTube. We also put it on our Facebook and our Twitter pages. You can find our audio-only broadcast of the podcast on Spotify and Apple, any of those platforms. Just search Whole Hog Sports. That's one word, WHOLEHOGSPORTS, Whole Hog Sports, and you can find our podcast. We appreciate you listening, and this is fun for us. We're like 4 months into this thing. I think we just celebrated our 4 month and of this iteration of our podcast. And we've done a podcast for many, many years, but this daily podcast, it's almost kind of like become, when we first started it, I didn't know what to expect. And now it's just kind of become part of the routine. I don't know that I could do it any other way.
Yeah, it was weird at first, you know, just it wasn't normal. And now it's, you know, I'd feel weird if we didn't have a podcast.
Sam Pittman was on this teleconference last night. He was asked a few things. He was asked about his hip. He said his hip is feeling better. Thanks for asking. He said that he's, what, like, I think as of yesterday, he was 5 days past the surgery and said that he was almost able to walk without the walker now. So that's good to hear for him. He was also asked about going back to the Liberty Bowl and the proximity that it had to Memphis. He said this is a bowl game that Arkansas actually pushed for. He said this is a bowl game that we wanted to play in, and part of it had to do with proximity. Here's what he had to say about that.
Close, and it's, you know, we can get some people there, and it's close for our kids. We don't, you know, we can bus up there, which we will, and have a good time and have a lot of familiar faces in the crowd, and you know, college athletics is still about moms and dads being able to get to the games, being able to see their sons play, and we think that'll allow that to happen.
Sam Pittman on playing in Memphis again. Lots of background noise on that teleconference last night. I don't know. I mean, I guess, hey, you want to play in Memphis, that's great. I would have preferred to see Arkansas go somewhere where they haven't been before or they haven't been in a long time.
Yeah, I'm kind of torn between that because once you started getting down to your options, I was like, I'd rather see Arkansas probably in Memphis than Birmingham.
Well, the travel's easier for sure.
Yeah, and the
familiarity.
If you're going to a lower tier SEC bowl, I mean, what are the great? I mean, the best option it seemed like was that somebody was going to get the Gasparilla and Tampa. Arkansas went to Tampa for the Outback. Now it's ReliaQuest. Mm-hmm. So that it's just like. The options of new cities that Arkansas hasn't been to was quite literally, it kind of felt like toward the end, Birmingham and Mobile. And I was like, okay, do we really care that much about?
I don't know that Mobile was ever a real possibility for Arkansas because, you know, Oklahoma ended up going to Fort Worth for the Armed Forces Bowl. The way this works is that the SEC, they've got so many bowl affiliations, and they couldn't they did not have enough bowl affiliations to fit all the teams after Alabama got knocked out of the playoff consideration. And how about Alabama? They thought they might be going to play a playoff game, and now all of a sudden they're going to play at the ReliaQuest Bowl in Tampa. Quite the downgrade for them. They even got, you know, because the Citrus Bowl gets the next pick out of the SEC teams, and they chose South Carolina to come to Orlando, which is a really big deal, I would say, for South Carolina because it's been a while since they played in a bowl, you know, that prestigious. But Oklahoma ends up going to the Armed Forces Bowl. Here's a point I was wanting to make, though. And I said this the other day, the way the bowls are chosen, it's not a meritocracy. It sometimes it's based on TV, sometimes it's based on proximity, different. Arkansas was the only 6-6 team out of the SEC that got into this so-called pool of six bowl games. Florida's ended up in the Gasparilla Bowl, which, you know, based on the way SEC chooses teams, Florida was one of the last three that was chosen. The Gasparilla Bowl and the Birmingham Bowl get chosen after these pool of six. So that's just kind of interesting because I was curious at one point yesterday, especially after Alabama got knocked out of the playoff, is Arkansas going to be the team that doesn't go to the non-SEC bowl? And lo and behold, Arkansas gets into what the SEC considers one of its better bowl games.
Yeah, and it all just makes – whenever you look at what happened, I mean, Florida's playing in its home state. Arkansas is playing across the river.
Basically in its home state.
Yeah, across the river from its home state. It seems like they really wanted to keep proximity a thing. I mean, Vanderbilt playing in the Birmingham Bowl, that's not too far for them. You know, you mentioned Oklahoma – where they're playing, I mean, that's not too far.
That's
from
home. For
you're
going
to have a huge crowd. I mean, they kept fan base proximity. It seems like as a important thing. I mean, LSU playing in the Texas Bowl. That's they're going to have a huge crowd in Houston. So, it's always interesting seeing how it all shakes out. And you know, you start stacking these up, and you're initially, I think, first thought being like, which is the best, and trying to pair with best team, best bowl, but it. Flight, and it seems like they're more like, okay, here's however many bowl games we have. Who are you closest to?
There's a great country song by the Panhandlers that says Houston's just a big old spur on the boot of Louisiana. So Houston is a home game for the Tigers. Before we get out of here on this segment, want to play you this exchange last night. Trey Biddy, who's a great guy and covers the Razorbacks, to kind of lay the framework for this, at the outset, Harold Grader, who is the associate executive director, I think, for the Liberty Bowl, he said, you know, keep your questions about the bowl game. Well, I mean, one of the big questions for Arkansas is, who are you going to have left? And Trey asked Sam about that, and this was the exchange. I'll just play it for you in its entirety.
Walk without my walker, so I do appreciate you asking me about it.
And obviously the transfer portal is not open, but there have been players that have entered the portal, a couple of your starting guards, three of your top four receivers. Just the challenges of overcoming some depletion heading into this bowl game against Texas Tech and how you address those.
Coach, we're not taking those questions tonight. Coach.
Okay. Oh, yes, sir. Matt, yes, sir. Thank you.
We prefer not to
about the roster.
Take those issues tonight.
Okay. It's about the roster heading into the bowl game. But.
And the audio's still playing, by the way. It's just like this long, awkward pause and silence before another question got asked. I guess the Liberty Bowl people don't want it being, you know, broadcast on their channels that these teams aren't going to be at you know, full strength.
The moment that he heard the word transfer portal, he was like, as soon as this question's out, I'm nipping this in the bud. But it was a very legitimate question for the game.
Absolutely.
And it's like, whatever, I guess. I guess we need to – and Sam was going to answer it. He started to, and then you heard the, oh, yes, sir, yes, sir. I won't – I'm not going to step on any toes today. But, goodness, I mean, it was just like – and I love Trey's response. Just like,
oh, he's right.
It's like, it's about the roster for the bowl game. Like,
yep.
Anyway,
so for anybody who says the questions don't get asked, they get asked. It's just sometimes coach doesn't get to answer them. I think he'll answer them at some point this week. Hopefully we'll hear from him. He had a news conference scheduled last week on the first day of the signing period, but that was also the day after he had his hip surgery and wasn't feeling up to it once that day actually got there. Totally understandable, I would think. And so hopefully we hear from Sam Pittman and can get some updates from him on all of the stuff happening with the Razorbacks personnel here in the next few days. When we come back, we'll talk Razorback basketball. But first, a word from our sponsors.
Want to enjoy your life again? Burning, numbness, and general pain in your feet and legs might be keeping you from your daily activities. Neuropathy treatment can be effective to restoring your life. Come see what we can do at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Uptown Rogers. We can treat your neuropathy pain and get you back in the game of life. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is located at 5102 West Pauline Whitaker Parkway in Uptown Rogers. At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Welcome back. We want to tell you about our friends at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute. They are your source for holistic wellness and your healthy lifestyle changes. Located in Uptown Rogers, the staff at Enhanced Healthcare will target your specific health plan for wellness, from neuropathy treatment, primary care, weight loss, and so much more. You can count on the experts at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Rogers. Razorback basketball team beat UTSA on Saturday over at Bud Walton Arena, 75-60, the final score. Arkansas trailed by 5 at halftime, actually trailed by 8 just before halftime. DJ Wagner hit a three-pointer with 4 seconds left in the first half. And then from there, Ethan, they outscored UTSA by 23 points. Two games in a row now where, you know, they haven't started a lot of games well this year. But this is two games in a row where they have played really well after halftime. What do you make of this?
I mean, it's starting to become kind of a trend that they don't play – they don't just blow out these, other than, like, your Maryland Eastern Shore. These kind of respectable mid-majors, they aren't going to – they're not great mid-majors, but they're not, you know, terrible. They haven't blown them out. They've struggled with them and then had to piece together big runs in the second half to put them away. And, you know, the final score ends up being where it's pretty, you know, respectable. Nobody's throwing a too big of a fit over – you know, winning by 15-20, but it's just not yet. You know, you watch this game and you haven't seen a complete 40 minutes at all, really yet against some of these teams. It's, you wonder if it's just like you got to get some of these guys that have been hurt, like Jonas Seydou. If you got to just get that chemistry right and get to where you know your real identity as a team. That's my thing. I'm like, I think I know their identity, but I'm not sure yet. I think their identity is that they turn teams over and get in transition and score that way. But the thing is, I haven't seen them do that against a power conference team really yet. That's how they always win these games against, you know, UTSA. I think of Lipscomb. I think of Troy, Little Rock. That's how they win those games. When they're at their best, even the Pacific game, when they're at their best, they are turning teams over and causing havoc and really suffocating for a little bit and turning their defense to offense. But I just, until I see that against an Illinois, you know, they have a chance tomorrow against Michigan, I think that's going to be their identity. But just got to see it against better competition.
Now, for the people who don't know, Ethan knows what the heck he's talking about. He was a manager for Mike Anderson's basketball teams at Arkansas. So, you know, I do yield to you on this. Zvonimir Visic couldn't play the other day. And we've heard Calipari mention time and time and time again how they just have not been able to scrimmage. And whenever he says they haven't been able to scrimmage, you know, what he's talking about is they haven't been able to scrimmage with their best players. I'm sure they've had some scrimmage work where they brought, you know, some of these end-of-the-bench type players in, and they've done some five-on-five. Adu was out for three games, and obviously Calipari said the other day that he's about 75 to 80% of what he's going to be after this foot surgery that he had in the fall. You've got Trevin Brazil, who had a turned ankle at one point, and I think it caused him to miss a game or two. What is the, like, what's the downside to not scrimmaging, and do you think it's something that's playing out on the court right now, the fact that they haven't been able to do a whole lot of that, at least with their top players, their best players, and do you think that's something that we're seeing on the floor?
Yeah, well, I was also a manager 1 year for Eric Musselman's teams, and
well,
that
wasn't
was a thing about
people.
That was a well, I was gonna say his practices for him, there was not much scrimmaging. He was a huge believer in do really, really hard drills, to where he wanted practices. His whole thing, I mean, I'm sure he said it to the media. I never watched back then, but he would always say he wanted a game to almost be a relief from practice because of how hard the drills and stuff were. He just was never a huge believer in scrimmaging a whole lot. Would do a lot of half court sets and stuff, but Mike Anderson on the flip side was completely, I mean, seven short periods of up and down just scrimmaging. And I think that
I'm a big believer in scrimmaging.
I'm a believer in I think that you got to have a mixture. I think situational drills are really important, but if you don't go up and down the court a lot against each other, it's hard to get into a game, in my opinion, and be ready for just exactly what all that entails. Because, I mean, you start getting – if you're not in great condition, which let me tell you, Mike Anderson's team, say what you wanted, but they were in great shape. You got to be in game condition to go up and down the court like that and be able to knock down shots when you're tired and – etc. I think that right now that is a downside if you can't scrimmage how you'd like, especially with my thing is especially when you've got a team like this one where they have not all played together for their whole careers at all. I mean, there's a lot of these Kentucky guys that maybe have some chemistry on the court, but I mean, there's still, I don't care how many months they've been together now, it's a work in progress whenever you have new guys to get to where you can play 5-on-5 with each other well. And I think right now that's probably hindered them some, that you don't have some of your guys full speed while you're trying to get them ready to go into a game and play another opponent. And you haven't even gotten to play with each other and practice a ton. I think that's definitely got to take a toll. But I do think at this point we've seen enough of some of these guys to know that they've got what you can expect from them in the future.
Did you ever run Cleveland Hill with them?
No, I was on a golf cart.
Have you ever ran Cleveland Hill?
Absolutely not.
I have, actually. You believe that? When I was a freshman in college, I took it was 1 hour course. It was called beginning jogging, and part of our route was we had to go run up Cleveland Hill.
Yeah, heck no. But I did get on a golf cart and carry water bottles, and would make sure if anybody needs.
Daryl Hawkins tells a great story about running Cleveland Hill. He would have been on early 90s teams. He said they're running Cleveland Hill, and then Nolan Richardson's blue Chevy Astro van comes up from behind him, and it's blaring, "Don't worry, be happy."
Yeah, so
he said that he could never listen to that song without thinking of, just that the pain and not of running up and down that hill so many times.
The conditioning of Mike Anderson's teams was absolutely, I want to know part of what they were doing. But, I mean, I was there for all of it. We had 2-a-days to where it was I would get there, I would walk from my dorm to Bud Walton, I'm in the 5 a.m. hour. I don't remember if it was 5 or 5:30 or what time we started, but it was early. And it was just getting everything ready, all the weighted jump ropes and all the medicine balls and everything ready. Because they would just, I mean, it was insane. They would, and we do it in Bud Walton Arena, they'd be just sprinting, then jump roping, then throwing medicine balls. And then I don't really remember, this is a very faint memory in my head, but I know they would go up on the concourse of Bud Walton Arena after that, and they would run laps around the concourse, which... It's a very, like I said, a very faint thing in my head. I'm not sure, exactly how many laps they had to run, but I think that they had it marked down to where they knew what a mile was up there, and they would run a mile through the concourse of Bud Walton Arena. So that was they did some crazy conditioning, and right now with this team, that's my biggest thing. I just am curious to see if they can get in that type of condition where they're going to be able to – because if you're not playing a lot, it's hard to be in game condition, but – then again, how important is it for, Jonas Adu's on or Ivicic right now? At what point do you need them to be at 100%? Right now, are you just trying to ease them back into there and get them to where they can at least, get some run in?
It's some stats from the game on Saturday. Adu Thiro, 26 points, 10 rebounds. The number that jumps out to me, 10 of 13 at the free throw line. That's an area where he's not played
and
particularly well.
And he started the game 3 of 6 from there, so that means he made his last seven.
In the second half, he scored 17 in the second half. He was 5 of 5 from the floor and 7 of 7 at the line in the second half. I mean, it wasn't a perfect half for him, but
it was close.
It was about as close as you can get.
Yeah, he's so explosive. I love watching his just like
whenever he wants to take a game over on offense, he's got the ability, I think, to do it.
I feel like he could play football.
Yeah, he looks like a linebacker.
A funny thing, his dad, I'm blanking on his dad's name, but great basketball player, I think played for Cal, right?
Like all their dads played for Cal.
Anyway, I'm waiting after the game to talk to the UTSA coach, and I'm kind of sitting over there, and Adu's doing his radio interview. And I mean, there's Adu's family sitting there, and there's no doubt in my mind that like, that has to be Adu's dad. Anyways, his sister's a basketball recruit.
Like a big-time basketball recruit, right?
She's really good. Her stock just keeps rising. She's one of those. But so I just introduced myself because Arkansas's recruiting her. So I introduced myself to Adu's dad, and let me tell you, the firmest handshake I've ever received in my entire life was Adu Thiro's dad.
I'll break it.
Oh, my goodness. I was like, this is a man's handshake. But anyway, that's just a side note. All that to say, the Thiros are built.
Yeah.
The Thiros are very built.
Yoked.
Yeah.
Arkansas in the last two games, by the way, they have shot 60% from the floor in the second half against Miami and UTSA, and they outscored those two opponents by a combined 31 points after halftime. Arkansas plays Michigan tomorrow night at Madison Square Garden. Tip-off going to be somewhere right around 8 o'clock p.m. Central Time. I believe it's going to be on ESPN. Miami and Tennessee are going to play in the first game. This is part of the Jimmy V Classic there at Madison Square Garden. Going back to the second half, though, John Calipari was asked about the way the Razorbacks have played in the second half the last couple of games. And this is typical Calipari. I told somebody the other day after I was listening, I was like, he's just going to talk about what he wants to talk about, and the questions are a time for him to catch his breath. No. So he was asked about the second half, and we're going to go on a John Calipari experience here.
Both have soon. Well, here's what I would tell you. I got to figure out why Nelly is getting so tired in 4 minutes, the first 4 minutes. What it tells me is a little anxiety, so we got to deal with that. It's hard for us to win if Boogie doesn't play well. Now, he played for 20 minutes. He didn't. And then he started playing. He has the freedom within how we're playing to go do what he does. Here's what I think of him. Triple-double. Points, rebounds. You see him go get rebounds? Takes them from centers and assists. That's what I see him as. You know what? To be that guy, woo, do you got to go hard. The entire time you're in there. You can't take plays off. You can't jog. You're chasing down rebounds. You're making easy. That's how I see him. But the last game, Adu didn't play well. And we won anyway. We don't have enough guys to have guys not play well, and we still win. But Nelly, second half, played. I mean, you're starting to see him. He's going to just keep coming into his own. He's physical. Proud of him. Proud of DJ. DJ did good stuff today. DJ doesn't care how he's playing. He plays to win. Nelly's kind of the same way. Jonas was good today. How about how TB finished the game? Diving on the floor. You've seen that many times. No. He's diving all over, blocking, rebounding, defending. He's capable of doing that. And again, I think he's got more offense than he has shown us to.
So that was John Calipari. Basically, the first question that is asked of him in a press conference, he's just going to go through the whole roster and tell you what he thought about their game.
It's funny because with him, like, you look at the transcription that we do as a team after the game, and it's like, that's question. You might as well just take questions out of the transcription. Just be like, Calipari thought one, Calipari thought two. Because, I mean, that was the answer to what was the difference in first and second half or whatever it was. I mean, he's just going to say what he wants to say. But, I mean, it is helpful stuff. It was very much regurgitated radio stuff right there from what he had just said on the court prior. Mm-hmm. But it was pretty valid stuff. It just didn't – yeah, it's
– It may not be the answer to the question you ask, but you do get good insights to the team.
Yeah, you do. And I think that I agree 100% with – I think Boogie Fland is a guy that in the future is going to have at least a triple-double. Or two,
He didn't play a very great game the other day, and
he almost
still
had one.
I mean, it was like 6-6-7.
I was saying this to somebody after the game. He's one of those guys that there's always people on a team that you look at the stat sheet after the game, and they just it's always quietly like
mm-hmm.
you look at it, and he was close to a triple double.
Yeah.
And on the women's team, Izzy Higginbottom, who plays from, she scored 18 yesterday, and I don't even remember any of them. But yeah, it's just there's always those players that their impact will always be felt on a game, and you look at a stat sheet at the end, and it, you know, they just quietly did their thing. I mean, Boogie didn't have a good offensive game at all, but he's still dishing out assists and crashing for rebounds.
Let's talk about the women's team here real quick. Just a short thought on their game yesterday. They beat Southeast Missouri State 84-45 at Bud Walton. They were trailing this game, I think, by double digits, right, early in the game. And they go on a 40-1 run. They hold SEMO without a field goal for 16 minutes and 22 seconds. SEMO, during one stretch from early in the second quarter to late in the third, missed 24 shots in a row.
We were trying to figure out how much – that's 16 minutes, 22 seconds of game action. We were trying to figure out how much, like, actual time. And we aren't positive, but it was close to an hour of just – because they had halftime, too, in there. But close to an hour of time – elapsed without a made shot from the field, and this was after they came out just making everything. It was wild, but 40-1 run, it's one of those things where it you knew Arkansas had just taken over the game, was dominating, but we had to like kind of think about it, like, wait, they're at 25 right now. Did they lead 24-12 and now they're down 25 to whatever it was? And it was just like it was one of those runs that you knew it was a big run. You didn't realize just how big it was, I don't think, at the arena. Just because it was a very quiet 40-1 run.
So basically it was the same amount of time that it took Reese Davis to get from the first team to the 12th team on the playoff selection
basically,
show.
Basically, yeah. That's what we went through at Bud Walton yesterday. But they're playing a lot better right now. I'll say that. They lost two games in Florida over the Thanksgiving holiday that they really had a chance, and especially Bowling Green. But even Oklahoma State, they had a chance, which – the net rankings have Oklahoma State as a fringe top 25 team. They're playing better right now. I don't know what that's going to lead to, but, I mean, the net rankings, love them or hate them, they agree, too. They've risen in 1 week 50 spots. They're, I think this morning, checked in at 127, which is not great. I'm not over here saying that this is a great basketball team, but I'm saying they are improving for sure. Like, it's undeniable that they're getting better.
How mad do you think ESPN was? Brett McMurphy scooped that Alabama was out and SMU was in the playoff before the selection show started.
I learned yesterday, because, I mean, this is my second full year covering the Razorbacks. I didn't really have your normal bowl day selection thing last year because they were a four-win team. But yesterday was the day I learned that Brett McMurphy deserves one day of the year to have your post his post notifications on. And it is bowl selection day because he finds out everything. And he really annoys a lot of people by doing it if you just check the replies.
I told you exactly how yesterday was going to go down.
Yeah, you gave me a timeline. You gave me a timeline on something with National Signing Day, which I won't mention, but you told me something there, and I was like, yeah, that's going to – and you were spot on. And then you told me something with Bowl Selection Day. You said, Brett McMurphy's going to scoop this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
SEC is going to come out with an announcement saying, like, things aren't official until we say they're official. Brett McMurphy's going to keep –
it was almost verbatim.
Yeah. I said Brett McMurphy's going to keep doing his thing, and he's going to be right, and then the SEC will be like, he is right.
You know, part of – I mean, just – and I understand why ESPN, they've got the goods. They withhold them. They want you to, you know, spend as much time as possible on their network. But, my goodness, let's not draw this thing out. The same thing happened – this has been, I don't know, within the last 5 to 10 years, all the years really start to blur. But, you know, CBS, they did this thing 1 year where they tried to they went against what they had done in the past, and they tried to stretch out the March Madness selection show for like 2 hours. And it was – people were not happy about it. And then the next year, somebody got the bracket, and they posted the bracket before CBS could have their selection. And then CBS went back and – they went back to the old way of doing it.
I was
hopefully
just about
ESPN
to say.
it'll teach them. It's like, come on, guys, let's we don't have all day to spend on ESPN to know is it going to be SMU or Alabama.
Yeah, I was just about to say is once March Madness starts getting scooped again, we're in trouble. I remember that year, and actually, that was a year that Arkansas. Speaking on the women's team again, Mike Nabors had a team that had just gone to the SEC champion because the women's got scooped too. It was the same year. I don't know how both of them, but the women's got scooped before, and his team had just gone to the SEC tournament championship and was playing well and had a head-to-head win over Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
And they should have gotten – Tennessee's never missed the women's NCAA tournament. It had to be pretty political because, like, they had the same record and Arkansas had beaten them and just gone to the SEC tournament championship, and Nabors and them had a watch party for the selection show, which that's I mean, that's in the first place pretty risky, but then it gets scooped before it even starts, and they find out. I mean, that's just miserable to have your – which I did notice yesterday in the football selection that, you know, SMU, they didn't want to – they saw what had happened last year to Florida State, and they said, we don't want any part of that, so they didn't have one. I think that's probably the way to go with a lot of these shows now is unless you are just like, we are in, no doubt. If you're a fringe team, just – Don't do it to yourself. Don't have to have it on camera when you figure out that you're not.
Yesterday was basically the 1 year anniversary of watching Mike Norvell lose his soul on live television. Just the slow.
Has he ever regained
it? And I don't think he has. It's been pretty rough.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to talk more about the playoff here in just a minute, but first a word from our sponsors.
Want to enjoy your life again? Burning, numbness, and general pain in your feet and legs might be keeping you from your daily activities. Neuropathy treatment can be effective to restoring your life. Come see what we can do at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Uptown Rogers. We can treat your neuropathy pain and get you back in the game of life. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is located at 5102 West Pauline Whitaker Parkway in Uptown Rogers. At Kendall King, we're proud of over 4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are Design.
Hey, welcome back. We want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They have been serving their community since 1971, committed, professional, versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. Come by and see them right now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at BentonvilleGlass.com. While we were in the last commercial break, we just learned that TJ Metcalf, the Razorback safety, has entered the transfer portal. Metcalf, 57 tackles, 7 pass breakups, 3 interceptions this year. Had a great game against Auburn. I said, you know, here on this set after that game, it was an All-America type performance. Now, he didn't replicate that again in another game, but it shows the potential that I think he has. I would guess some big names are going to come calling for him.
Yeah, and his brother, too, entered as well. Tevis is I read. And he was on the fringe of getting to play this year, I think. It's just brutal right now for who they're losing. And, I mean, this is a guy who he stepped in this year and became a starter. And he was one of Travis Williams, Travis Williams loved TJ Metcalf. You hear him talk about him in the preseason, and that's pretty clear. It's just the hits keep on coming for Arkansas right now. I don't know what.
It's not just Arkansas, guys. It's not. I mean,
it's not. But Arkansas's losing more.
They're getting hurt.
They're losing starters over and over. That's what I'm saying. A lot of programs. Name me
happening.
Another one that's losing more starters right now.
Well, Texas Tech, who they're playing this in the bowl game. I know they've lost at least 3 starters to the.
Well,
transfer
Arkansas's
portal.
Lost like 6 or 7.
Yeah, so six. I think they've lost 6.
Satania,
and then they've
has
had 3
Ron
who have opted
Kutis.
Out of the bowl game.
Yeah. Well, Satania has. Kutis, Braun, which...
We don't know if Braun has or
well,
not.
The
we
writing's on the
might.
Wall there. Trey Biddy mentioned it in the video last night to Sam about it. Metcalf.
Maybe Sam was going to correct him.
There's six right there, and I feel like I'm forgetting one, too. Arkansas is losing a lot of starters is the thing.
Yeah.
But
again, I mean, this is the first day of the portal. It's not going to surprise me if it happens to a lot of teams.
Yeah.
The teams that are winning, I don't think they're going to lose a lot of players. But these teams that are in this 4-8 to 6-6, 7-5 range, or even worse, I think they're going to lose a lot of starters. I mentioned this last week. It's professional baseball. It's Juan Soto going to the Mets for 15 years and $765 million. Okay, not quite that bad. But you know what I'm saying? It's when you have a good year, the great programs are going to come and they are going to buy you out of that experience that you're in and come play for them. It's what Ohio State did last year. Ohio State watched Michigan win a national championship. And Ohio State said, we are going to go all in. We're going to do everything it takes from a financial standpoint, and we're going to win. And there's probably about 20 teams that are like Ohio State that think that their God-given birthright is to win a national championship in football. And those teams are going into these teams like Arkansas, who's 6-6, and they're going into Vanderbilt, who's 6-6, and they're going into all these different teams, and they're taking, hey, we're going to take your running back, Rocket Sanders, come over here and play for us. Hey, we're going to take Chris Paul. Come over here and play for us and be on this championship-level team that we're building. And that's what's happening right now in the portal. And if you don't have the NIL funds to keep them at bay, the players are going
to
go.
Yeah, I'll be curious to see where all these guys land. I'm sure there'll be some big programs they end up at. But, like, it's just there's no stability right now. How do you start to build if there's not really stability?
I think if you're Arkansas,
you keep on having to just redo your whole roster. It's the same story over and over. There's not, which I get it, a lot of programs are having this problem of you have to rebuild your whole roster, but the teams that are winning and starting to win, Ole Miss went heavy in the transfer portal last year, and they didn't get the winner that they wanted to go going to the playoff, but they had enough pieces coming back too, where it was a blend. I feel like right now you look at what's happening with Arkansas, their whole team is going to be very different next year. Like I don't think you're getting that core that Sam Pittman wanted. You're getting a few pieces that'll be good, nice to have around, but it's slowly losing grip of like a strong core.
And what's the core? Where did they come from?
That
came from the transfer portal, right?
Yeah. You think about it.
Sorry, transfer portal. Carmona, transfer portal. Talen Green, if he comes back, transfer portal.
And then you have guys that, we don't know for sure yet on that. But like I said, the writing on the wall seems pretty clear. He transferred from Florida in the first place. And then it's a lot of, guys that you recruited that you're losing. But, yeah, it's just – all I'm saying is there's not much stability there right now. It's just each year it feels like having the roster, you got to relearn it. And I hate it because that's a thing everywhere. I mean, that is happening everywhere.
I'm telling you, I watched 12 games of Razorback football this year, and I probably can't tell you half the team. Like, I see a number, and I'm still having to check because number, whatever, one on defense, that was different last year, and that was different the year before, and that was different the year before, and it was different the year before. And I just can't keep track of who all these players are.
And here's the thing. It's just these signing classes that they bring in. Do we see any – like, we rarely see guys that they brought in as a freshman that finished their career. I mean, you think about this
year.
And,
again, that's not just Arkansas. That's everywhere.
It's everywhere. And that's what I'm saying. It sucks that there's not stability anymore. Or you just – it. Does anybody even care? Like,
I don't think sure
there
are
players – Your signing class is good for a year or two, I guess, now.
I'm sure there are players who sign – with a team thinking, hey, I'm going to stay there for all 4 years. But I think that there are also a lot of players who sign thinking, hey, this is my first stop.
Yeah.
I got one or two more to go.
Yeah. It's just.
It's kind of like there are people who get married and it's like, hey, this is who I'm committed to.
This
and then there are people who have shotgun weddings, and it's like, hey, I know this isn't going to last for
you. Bring in signing classes that are like 20-plus, and like this year you had 2 sixth-year guys, Eric Gregory and Hudson Clark, who they were at Arkansas their whole time, and then you had a senior, Jaden Johnson. He was like those are the guys that made it the whole way. It's just you don't keep – it's not that – I think it's not that you're losing – everybody loses a lot of their signing class. I mean, every school does. It's just that – you really only have one who makes it all the way through 4 years? I don't know. It's just with Jaden Johnson, he's the only senior on this year's team that did. And that was a class that wasn't recruited by the previous staff. I mean, Gregory and Hudson Clark were, I know for sure Gregory was. I think Hudson Clark was too, came in a Morris year. Jaden Johnson was the only, Pittman's staff guy who just went his whole time at Arkansas from that 2021 class, I think. But, yeah. All I'm saying, there's not much stability, and Arkansas just keeps on losing starters.
Hey, switching gears, different sport transfer news, happier news for the Razorbacks. They get a 317 career hitter from Texas to come transfer to the softball program. Courtney Day, a utility player from UT, coming to Fayetteville. Is he playing? Is he able to play in this coming spring?
I need to check on that. I'm not sure because it's
anybody who hit 317 at a program like Texas has got my interest.
Yeah, and she was Women's College World Series All Tournament team in 2022.
She would have played on two national runner-up teams.
Yeah, they're getting somebody who comes from a program, a meaningful player, or a player who played meaningful time at a winning program, and I think that's always a benefit if somebody comes from a culture where they're not used to losing.
It's kind of like when football got Drew Sanders to come in from Alabama. Mm-hmm. That was a big deal. Well, Xavier Sory coming in from Georgia.
And I think even on like lower levels, like this women's basketball team this year, I mean, we just talked about them, they're not that great, but Kiki Smith, she came from like an undefeated JUCO team, and it's losing has really, I mean, she said it in like
not
a,
used to it.
She's not used to it, and she's like, she said in a postgame, she's like, I'm not used to losing. I hate this. And I think that there's something about that whenever you get a player that comes from a culture where losing is supposed to, you aren't supposed to be used to losing. I think that a lot of times if you get a player that's from a, transfers in from somewhere where they lost a lot, they're not, I don't know, it doesn't feel that much different to them when they lose at Arkansas.
Playoff bracket is out. We've got the bracket pulled up here. I don't know if there's a whole lot of surprise. When SMU lost to Clemson the other night the way they lost, I said SMU's got to be in over Alabama. You cannot penalize that team for playing a game that most of these other teams didn't have to play, and then they lose on a 50. Now, SMU didn't play those last three plays very well. They kicked off, gave a guy a chance to return. They played prevent defense. Bob Holt saying, what's a prevent defense do? It prevents you from winning. They gave Clemson yardage, and Clemson kicked a 56-yard field goal. SMU kept a timeout in its pocket, didn't call a timeout before the field goal. They didn't play at the end of that game well, but they did come back and make it a competitive game against Clemson. So I'm happy to see SMU get a chance. I did not want to see, Ethan, a playoff of nothing but SEC and Big Ten teams. I think that's what a lot of people seem like they're clamoring for. But at some point, winning has to mean something. I understand that SMU and some of these other teams, Indiana, they didn't play the schedule that an Alabama played or a South Carolina played. But winning has to mean something. And Alabama had its chance to get in the playoff. And you know what they did? They wet the bed against Oklahoma. Ole Miss had its chance. You know what they did? They wet the bed against Florida. And so, to me, I didn't shed any tears last night for Alabama or South Carolina or Ole Miss because they all lost three games, and winning has got to mean something.
Yeah, and I saw on the, leading up to the show, somebody was, an ESPN reporter was, like, contending of, like, somebody was saying SMU shouldn't get penalized for playing, and this reporter was saying, they should get penalized for losing. And this person was like, well, Alabama didn't have the opportunity. Like, they would have – had Alabama played in the SEC championship game against Georgia or Texas, they had a great chance to lose that game. I mean, it's like – I don't like these arguments of, like, SMU – like, of just trying to diminish that a conference championship game is an extra game that a team had to play that other teams aren't having to play. If Alabama had gotten in with losses to 6-6 Vanderbilt, 6-6 Oklahoma, and Tennessee – over an SMU team that, had they not made their conference championship, would have had a 3-point loss to BYU and otherwise run the table. That's just that's whenever you get into a situation where it's conference championships genuinely are just a risk, not a reward. And I mean, I think they still are, but I kept on hearing on the ESPN broadcast yesterday them saying like just let's make it clear this is a lose-lose situation as far as like if we. Like, no matter what, this is
Alabama's ADs out here saying, "Well, we're going to have to not schedule so hard." dude, you didn't lose your non-conference games. You lost to Vanderbilt and Oklahoma, and yeah. that's why you're not in the playoff.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like people – it's just ridiculous. Like, they were – ESPN just kept on pushing this whole, like, it's a – there's not a win in this situation because we were either penalizing somebody for a conference championship or penalizing somebody for a tough strength of schedule. And I'm like, well, when you're – when – don't lose three games. Don't lose to Vanderbilt. Don't lose to Oklahoma.
There is a legitimate argument and conversation to be had about strength of schedule and how one team is not like the other in terms of who they played to get to this point. But there's no great way to fix that. Have you watched the NFL?
I mean,
have you seen the NFC South?
Trust me, I have.
But that's the point. Yeah. You know, it's like, you're going to have divisions.
Falcons and Saints did absolutely clobber the Cowboys this year.
Yeah, no, yeah, everybody clobbered the Cowboys this year. Wait till the Bengals beat them on the Simpsons set tonight.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's in the NFL too. You're going to have NFL teams that make the playoffs. I saw the, you know.
And the Falcons beat the Eagles.
I've seen many teams go to the playoffs in the NFL with 500 or even a losing record because they were the best team in a bad division. That's the same thing that you've got going on in college football. In my opinion, though, if you win your conference, you need to get a chance to see what you can do on the biggest level. And that might mean that you're an 8-9 NFL team, and there's another team over here in this, you know, division that's, you know, 12-5 or whatever the record is, and maybe they don't get in because they're just not – they're the third best team in their division. But that's just kind of how it goes. You know, you got to win your games to get yourself in position to get there. So I don't have any problem with all these teams from other conferences getting in. I did not want to see seven SEC teams in the playoff. Spare me. I didn't want to see that. Sydney, pull the bracket up real quick if you would. So here's the bracket. Clemson, Texas are going to play a first-round game. The winner will play Arizona State at the Peach Bowl. Tennessee is going to play at Ohio State. The winner will play Oregon in the Rose Bowl. We've seen Ohio State and Oregon play in the Rose Bowl before, but never both as Big Ten teams. SMU is going to go to Penn State. Winner's going to play Boise State at the Fiesta Bowl. And Indiana and Notre Dame, state title game here between the Hoosiers and the Fighting Irish. The winner will play Georgia at the Sugar Bowl in the quarterfinals, or in the semifinals, quarterfinals.
Yeah, I like these matchups across the board. Honestly, I there are some paths that seem a little bit easier to me. But at this point, I'm like, we have a 12-team playoff. The best teams – this is a year that I'm like, I don't, do we have a far and away best team? But
I saw a tweet yesterday, by the way, if I could just – they said Hoosiers and Rudy were directed by the same guy. They said that guy needs to be the honorary captain at Indiana Notre Dame.
That's funny. Yeah. There's some potential for some just very, very cold games here.
Penn State, Ohio State, Notre Dame all hosting first-round playoff games.
And then – the next round goes to bowl games. That'd be funny if Boise got a game.
All of the bowl games are basically, you know, all the big bowl games, they're either in what are, you know, typically warm weather areas or they're indoors. So, like, the Rose Bowl is outdoors, but that's in Los Angeles. The Orange Bowl's in Miami. Otherwise, these other games are indoors. So, there's your playoff bracket. I didn't see a team that I felt got screwed. Like Florida State, I think, did last year.
Yeah. In a 12-team playoff, that's what I'm saying. I'm not – any of these teams that now miss out, it's like, yes, fan bases are going to be upset, but end of the day, don't lose to Vandy. Don't lose to OU. Don't – yeah, it's like – there's
don't
a very –
don't lose to Kentucky if you're old.
Last year was what are you telling Florida State? Just don't be in the ACC.
Don't – well, I mean, what they were telling Florida State last year is don't let your quarterback get hurt.
Yeah.
And
don't play in the – I mean, it was just a – there was none of that this year. This year, it's like if you're an Alabama fan just losing your mind over this, like, you know, go get some sleep, wake up and realize – I mean, hopefully it hits you like, guy, we shouldn't have lost to Vanderbilt. I mean, imagine selling that to an Alabama fan before the season that Vanderbilt was going to keep him out of the playoff. I mean, that's – couldn't make it up, but that was the 2024 season.
Yep, it's been a fun year. I think it's been a fun year for college football. I like that – you've got so many more teams that are part of the conversation right now. And I'm looking forward to seeing how this playoff bracket shakes out.
Yep.
Appreciate you being with us. Hope you come to our website at wholehogsports.com. We'll have plenty of coverage today as the transfer names keep rolling in. We got a lot of coverage, too, from yesterday, the announcement about Arkansas Texas Tech playing in the Liberty Bowl, a lot of stuff that we didn't get to cover today. Tomorrow we'll have Anthony Christensen on from New York. He's on his way right now to Madison Square Garden for the Arkansas-Michigan basketball game. Again, we hope we'll see you on our podcast tomorrow. And until then, at WholeHogSports.com. Have a great day, everyone.